There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
Right, away we go. FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile on this Monday. Glad to have you here. And as we get started, the ways to contact the show. I know those of you who've been here for 15 plus years, y'all got this, but there's new folks all the time. And welcome, new folks. It's 251-343-0106. That gets you through on the text line and the good old-fashioned phone call, 251-343-0106. And a reminder, too, if you have that FM Talk 106.5 app, I know a lot of you do. You can always use that talkback feature, the microphone icon on the front page of the app where you're streaming the station or getting show information or checking out our podcast or traffic maps, weather information. You can also just press that microphone icon, records a message, emails it to the show, and I can play it back here on the air as well. All right. Hopefully you had a great weekend. You had Father's Afternoon, Father's Minute yesterday. Hopefully that was good for the dads out there. We'll talk more about that later on in the show as it looks like, you know, those in Washington. Actually, let me ask our buddy Todd Stacey from Alabama Daily News and Capital Journal. You know, you've worked in Montgomery, obviously, and in Washington. The politicos in Washington, they're normal people, right? They do normal cookouts and you know, drink a cold beer and do stuff like that, mow the lawn, all that normal stuff.
Absolutely. Not a whole lot of lawns in D.C., but other than that, yeah.
They do? Okay.
It wouldn't be much fun if they didn't.
Okay. Well, I was just thinking, like, we'll get into Chuck Schumer with his staged I'm grilling out for Father's Day picture, and that reminded me of Elizabeth Warren back in, 2020 when she said, I'm just hanging out here in the kitchen drinking beer, you know, with the dog and all that stuff. Like, we're just normal people. So, all right.
They're just like us.
Yeah, just like us. They're not like us. I think there's a song out about that. Okay, let's start off right here at the top, because this is a story that we've talked about over time, and I like when we can come back to a story that we've complained about, or I've complained about. You're the journalist, I'm the editorialist, although you editorialize as well. But when there's something good to add to it, I like it. You have a headline here, Alabama students performing remarkably better on reading proficiency, a new report shows. Now, this is that question about the Literacy Act, right? And having mm-hmm. these kids read. Like, where were we? Where have we gone? What are they saying from the state?
Yeah, it really is a success story. I mean, we like it when, especially on a topic like education, when we can say, yeah, we're heading in the right direction. And you'll remember back in 2019, the legislature passed the Alabama Literacy Act, and it was supposed to put a whole lot of better resources, better methods into the classroom, also empowering reading coaches to send to especially troubled districts, and a real focus on making sure that Alabama's third graders can read before they're passed along to fourth grade. And the reason for that is, you know, studies show that if you can't read by fourth grade, then you really are going to have a hard time catching up after that. They call it, you know, before third grade you're learning to read, but after fourth grade you're reading to learn. So you really have to know how to read to be able to grow and do everything else in school. So that's why. But a part of that law said, okay, starting at a certain point, if you cannot read at grade level, if you cannot read proficiently by third grade, then you cannot be promoted to fourth grade. You will be held back. And there are all kinds of mitigation efforts that happened. They're really, you know, you can get studied up through the summer and still be able to go to fourth grade, but that's the That's the cutoff, and that happened this year. So that was this year. If you can't read proficiently, you can't go to fourth grade. Well, 91% of Alabama's third graders read well enough to be able to be promoted to fourth grade, and that's terrific. Mm-hmm. I don't know anybody that thought the score was going to be that high, and so it's a success story. It's something we should celebrate. At the same time, you have to acknowledge that there will still be some students that there's a difference between reading sufficiently and reading proficiently.
Sure.
And so there are still going to be some students, not many, but maybe a couple of thousand, who aren't necessarily reading on grade level, but they're reading well enough to where, you know, the board is comfortable, you know, passing them along. The key will be to increase those standards as we go along. And I think a lot of lawmakers are interested in that.
Yeah, it is right. And of course, the part of me would say, okay, well, if they could, you know, if they, why couldn't they get it done before then? They can get it done now. But I'm not going to do that. I'm going to say celebrate what's good here. And yes, and putting some actual goalpost or a finish line there saying you've got to achieve this level to go on to the next grade, I think is the kindest thing. I mean, remember during the debate, people were saying, like, people who believe like I do were unkind. And I said, no, I think you're unkind if you move a kid along who doesn't have the reading skills. You make them think they're stupid or something like that when they're not. So I think this is the kindest thing you can do to say, you can't go to the next grade until you can read. I think that's absolutely the right thing to do.
Absolutely. It does no service to a child to socially promote them, even though they're far behind and can't catch up. So, yeah, I mean, it's tough love, but it's love. And again, it's all about making sure that kid can read. And so I don't know who wouldn't want that. So it's good news when we see the fruits of a law. It shows that sometimes when you do the hard things and make the tough votes on something that, you know, at the time could have been politically unpopular, but here are the results. We're doing a lot better. And one other thing I'll mention about this, I had a great conversation with Representative Terry Collins on Capitol Journal last week about this. And she said what's even more remarkable, because, you know, these third graders, these are basically the COVID kids. Mm-hmm. Right? These are the kids that were in kindergarten or maybe in first grade during the COVID years. Maybe they've been held back before. So they had that interruption a little bit. But she said there are some even better indicators of today's second graders and even first graders, because they're all tested too, right, in different ways. But she said that those kids are showing real signs of proficient reading at a really high percentage. And so that's really encouraging going forward. Look, it's a shame that anybody over these last several years got passed along when they couldn't read, and we can't get that back. I know that there are efforts to catch those kids up and all that. But it's really encouraging that in these lower grades, these programs are working. These efforts are working. And a big credit to the teachers who have, like, really bought in to, you know, the way to teach reading, to the reading coaches, and to the legislature for understanding that this was a real problem, and that if we can figure out reading, then really you can figure out everything else. So I'm pretty pleased with the progress.
Yeah, and the Numeracy Act, where did that go? Where are we on that?
Well, yeah, that's a very similar law.
The math
equivalent,
right?
Having math skills, building the math skills. The difference is there's no holdback provision for students. And while they were passing that, I remember asking the question, well, why not do the same thing and hold them back if they can't do math? And the answer is you saw what I said about reading. Like, if you can't read by third grade, it's really unlikely that you're going to catch up. Well, the brain works a little differently on math. You can catch up on math. The brain accepts that learning even as you get older. So instead of holding back individual students, what the Literacy Act focuses on is schools and even school districts. So if this school has a certain percentage of students that are really bad at math and really haven't been taught well on math, then that school can be identified as, you know, troubled, problematic, whatever the terminology is. And so that extra resources go to that school, math coaches and all the like, focus on that school to get them back up. And so, you know, that was passed, I guess, in 2021. Mm-hmm. And so it's a few years behind in implementation, but the same education advocates are really excited about that law too. You know, the math and reading are the basics, and it really matters what happens in the early grades. And so I think, you know, these two laws are forward thinking. They're the right law, you know, legally, but now you got to implement it. That's the tough part. I think there's some pretty good signs that went well, even through COVID with the Literacy Act. The Numeracy Act, I think you're seeing some good things too, but we don't have those real results yet, and might not for a couple more years.
Okay. Now, on the flip side of this, that's some positive stories there. Then I hear that State Superintendent of Education Mackey is talking about how funding is going away, like $2 billion in funding going away. I guess a lot of us that were like open-eyed saw that coming back, you know, when we said, well, this is not going to be forever. But he's saying Alabama loses $2 billion in funding, and they're going to have to make, I guess, cuts in schools now?
Well, what he's really talking about is the budget, the revenue coming into the Education Trust Fund, that's leveling out. We've been growing so much over the past several years. I mean, it's grown more than I've ever seen it, to the point where it's almost $10 billion in the regular budget, and another $3 million in the supplemental. So the revenue itself is kind of flattening out, maybe dipping a little bit. But what they're missing out on after this year is all that federal money, there was COVID money sent to legislatures, you know, just like, you know, we talked about ARPA and things like that. But there was additional money sent for education purposes all throughout COVID. And so that money that was sent to the Alabama Department of Education and to local schools, mostly to local schools, that money's going away. And so it might not be the biggest problem in the world. And that's why if you were getting a couple million dollars in COVID money, you put that towards emergency things that you don't have to have a budget line item for next year or 5 years from now. You don't create a new program that you're not going to be able to fund when the temporary money runs out. And so lots of warnings about that at the beginning. And so I hope everybody heeded it, because if you put that money towards a new, you know, teaching unit or something, well, that money's drying up, and you are going to have a hole in your budget.
Well, I hope they didn't do it that way, because I mean, early on, I think you and I talked about it many times. I know I did. I said, hey, y'all, be careful. You do something that's now becomes part of the budget, air quotes here, you know, the annual budget, and that money won't be there.
That's exactly right. And I don't know every penny that was spent and everything. I do know that I think the Department of Education was careful, and they were told to be careful about not creating programs with temporary money. But, you know, any government agency, it's just sort of natural. They just want more resources. And so it will be interesting to see, like, I'm sure that there were programs set up that were COVID related, right? Like getting students caught back up in the classroom, right? Mm-hmm. But that's a temporary program, you know? And so we shouldn't freak out when money like that goes away and that program goes away, because guess what? It's been 3 years since the remnants of COVID.
Right. So the emergency has passed.
Exactly. And so it's not, the sky is not falling. This was always going to happen. I think Dr. Mackey was just trying to make sure everybody was aware that things are going to be different. And you know, and so it doesn't have to be a disaster if people planned properly.
All right. One last one before we wrap up, though. The headline here, couples ask judge to find Alabama law that provides legal immunity to IVF providers unconstitutional. So walk us through this. So it was at first, you know, when the way the law was written in Alabama, the IVF fell under the abortion law, right? And then they go back and change it to make it legal. Now it's challenged again. Am I close on that?
Yeah, I mean, basically that, and they talked about this when they were passing the law, the IVF law, that just because you change a definition in state law, does it change the constitutional amendment that much of that ruling kind of relied on? And so That's what this lawsuit's all about is, yeah, that law that they passed protecting IVF is in conflict with the constitutional amendment, you know, passed back in, I guess that was 2019 or 2020. I'm not a lawyer. I had plenty of smart lawyers at the time of this law passing that said, yes, it's fine. It's not going to be a problem. And so at least the legislature was convinced that this was good enough. But they always knew that there was going to be a legal test, and here it is. And so what's interesting about that is, does this go back to the same Supreme Court that ruled on IVF to begin with? And if so, do they rule differently? I mean, goodness gracious.
Would it be a different question in front of the Supreme Court? You see, the question at hand, they rule one way because they say, well, you didn't bring me the right question or something to the effect.
Yeah, I think so. And I'm sure that the justices will adhere to the Constitution as they see it and all that. But it is interesting because that one ruling back in February caused an international, certainly national, uproar. I mean, it is one of the hottest political topics in the country right now. And I really doubt the Alabama Supreme Court thought it was going to be that way. And so you got to take that into consideration. I mean, all of the IVF conversation that is happening nationally right now is all because of that court ruling here in Alabama. And so I'm just saying that the stakes politically are a lot higher than they were in February when nobody was talking about this.
That's for sure. So we'll be hearing more about this going forward. Todd, people want to, first of all, check you out on the TV or on the YouTube. How do they do that for Capital Journal?
Well, yeah, TV is primary now. You want to watch Friday nights at 7:30 or Sundays at noon, Capital Journal. But we're also on YouTube. That's where you can catch up with old episodes. You can actually subscribe right there so you never miss an episode. Yep. But yeah, I had an interesting show this last week, a lot about education. Friday nights at 7:30, Sundays at noon. And also, you're going to want to get the Daily News newsletter. That comes out every morning about 8 o'clock. Get you caught up on exactly what you need to know to start your day. So, aldailynews.com.
All right. It's good stuff. Todd, as always, appreciate talking to you. We'll talk next week.
All right, Sean. Be good.
All right. There he goes, Todd Stacey. We're coming right back. Midday Mobile right here on FM Talk 106.5.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, 1227 FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile Monday style. Reading a text here. This one from Brian said, 2 years ago, my office hired a young man right out of high school, 18 years old. He's from Robertsdale. He was a wonderful young man, but he could not read or write properly. In our business, we daily fill out contracts and service documents to become legal documents after they are signed. And everything has to be legible and spelled correctly. About 6 weeks of us trying to work with him during business hours to improve things, he quit because he just wasn't going to happen. And that was immensely unfortunate. His school and teachers have done him a great disservice. I agree, Brian. That was the big push I had on the Literacy Act, that they're saying, oh, well, you're going to, if you hold these kids back, then they're going to have, it's going to be bad for their, bad for emotionally. It's going to give them a stigma. That was the word I was looking for, a stigma or something because they were held back. I was like, you know what's even more cruel than that is launching them into the next grade when they don't have the skills to read the material to learn it. Because you know that has happened over time, and there are people then decide, well, I'm just a dumb kid. No, you're not. You just don't have the reading skills. As soon as you do that, you realize the potential of that person. So, I'm glad that they're doing better on that. Chris, thank you. Chris has sent me a couple pictures. Chris, how far out were they? Well, because we've got a sailfish. You don't see a lot of sails this time of year in a fishing tournament. So Chris's son, and look at that wahoo, y'all. If y'all want to bring me some wahoo steaks, I'm good on it. Oh, speaking of fish, when we come back for the break, I don't know if y'all seen it. I put it up on the, I put it up on the Twitter feed or the X feed at FM Talk 106.5. I heard somebody mention it this morning on a text to Dan and Dalton about the bull shark story. And thank you, whoever that was, because I went and looked it up. It is a story. It's over at AL.com, but it comes out there. Let's see, the Charlotte Observer, which I guess, a network. So they republished a story that comes from there. And it is a story about a squiggly shark caught off Florida, a mystery. And it's all about this squiggly bull shark. And the picture is of a speckled trout. I want y'all to go look at this and tell me what you think over on the Twitter feed. All right, coming right back. More Midday Mobile.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile on this Monday. Glad to have you along. And it is the start to a week. So let's start this off with a telephonic visit to our buddy Ron at Mobile Bay Coins and Fine Jewelry. Hey, man.
How you doing, sir, Sean?
Doing good. Gold and silver. What are we looking like when we start this week here?
It started out a little lower. Some profit taking took place Friday, and it's still down a little bit. So a great time to start investing in gold and silver. And gold right now is right at 2310, and silver is at 2945. So still respectable prices. We got lots of stuff in stock, and premiums are down. So there's never been a better time to start a hedge or investing in gold and silver.
Yeah, it's and watching that silver price over time, you know, the longer game, it's been pretty darn impressive where that is. And I know people that bought gold back then probably feel the same way as well. But you got, yeah, you can't ever do that until you get in. You know, there's, you get this, you know, was it paralysis by analysis thing? But you've talked about it before too, that the way people will buy equities with dollar cost average, you think that same idea works? Well, you've proven it works out with precious metals.
Yeah, unless they have some kind of information that nobody else has, it's really the best way to do it. It's been proven out over years. I mean, you win some, you lose some. If you do it all at once, if you cost average it out, you tend to win all the time. So that's probably the best way to go. We have a lot of people following that advice. They'll come in every week or every 2 weeks at payday and buy a set amount, and they just keep adding to it. And most of the smart, savvy people aren't putting all their investment into that. They're kind of breaking it up between stocks and making sure they do some hedging. There are people out there that just don't trust the U.S. dollar at all right now, or are putting, you know, much more into the actual bullion than they are the actual stock market. But I still think you got to have some stocks. You can't have all your eggs in one basket.
No, you've always preached with me kind of a balanced diet approach, right? Some of this, you point this as a hedge, as part of a portfolio. That this is not the only thing you do. And heck, you're the guy selling it. But you're like, yeah, this is part of what you do, not the only thing.
Yeah, same thing I do. Most of the people, like I said, that are really doing it right don't just have to have a try. They have cash, they have stocks, and then they have some type of hedge. In bullion, you know, Angela used to joke about doing it with coffee and other things, but really any commodity would work, but you want things that aren't going to expire. And gold and silver and platinum plating never expire.
That is for sure. Tell folks how to come in and get an education like I've gotten over the years from you, and look at what you have option-wise for precious metals. How do they find you?
Yeah, come for a free show and tell. Come by the shop at 2204 Government Street. We're located in Midtown Mobile. If you need directions, call us, 251-725-1590. And if you want all the other information about us, go on the web to MobileBayCoins.com.
All right, Ron, I appreciate it. We'll talk soon.
See you, Sean.
All right, see you. There goes Ron at Mobile Bay Coins and Fine Jewelry. To the text line we go. Oh, yeah, I was going to say, Chris had sent these pictures, and good job to your son, fourth place. That looks like a wahoo that might have some steaks. It might come my way. And a sailfish. I need to hear the rest of the story on that. Also, Chris says, please read this out. Please read this out on the air. Please read this on the air. But you would not believe how many grown adults, white and black, in prison who can't read or write. Well, Chris, that is you have the sheriff has sat in here. Police chiefs have sat in here and said the study. I mean, there's not just them going finger in the wind, but the studies show that, right? That is a... Not that all people that can't read or write by a certain grade will end up in prison, but so many that end up in prison couldn't read or write by a specific age. So, yeah, it's in that Numeracy Act, you know, on the math side, it's still very important. But the Literacy Act, I mean, you have to, there are words in a math book, you know, there are, I mean, that's, even in math, if you're reading the thing, you have to be able to read the words and say, oh, here's the equation, here's the problem, something like that. So, yeah, I'm glad that they're turning things around there. I mean, I could sit and just complain that why didn't they do that sooner, but let's celebrate that it's going the right way now. Oh, yes. Michael says a speck just looks like it had been hit by a dolphin when it was younger. The picture, if you go see on Twitter, this is like, I don't know, because we got the, this Fox 10 has a bunch of, we did a story last week or something, the number of bull sharks in the bay. You know, it's like running, more of the run and hide, like, you know, bull sharks in the bay story. But this one was, it was on AL.com, but it's not like a local story, right? They'll do that inside their group of publications. This one came out of the Charlotte Observer, and it's, the story, I guess, is fine. It's just the picture that goes with it, and which I've offered before to local media, that I would like to start a consultancy group. And what we would do is consult media on, like, outdoor stuff. Like, before you put up a picture of an animal and call it the wrong thing or something to that effect, you can run the stuff by us for a small charge, and we'll help make sure you don't put up, you know, a beeline or snapper and call it a red snapper in a story or something like that. Well, this one, though, is pretty – I don't know how this one makes the – made it past there. Even if there's nobody in that newsroom there at the Charlotte Observer that – has ever caught a fish before, but you look at the picture, you can tell it's a fish and not a shark. But the story said a prehistoric-looking fish caught in Florida waters has been identified as a peculiar bull shark by a marine biologist. It says bull sharks are supposed to be thick and stocky, but this one is twisted more like an eel in motion. It was dubbed the squiggly shark by the Florida Fish Wildlife Research Institute. So now I am fascinated to want to see the actual shark, but the picture they've attached with it is a picture of a speckled trout, or I guess it's spotted sea trout, to be official, that has a scoliosis or something like that. But in reality, just like the text from a second ago from Michael, it looks like a fish that was just hit when it was young and grew that way. It's out there. We'll see if they pull it back, if they pull it down or not. But it's on the list. Speaking on the list too, coming up at about a little after 1 o'clock, State Senator Chris Elliott joins me. I don't know if you remember, if you're listening last week, I had a conversation with John Sharp from AL.com, and he said, you know, in this meeting and the discussions about the hold that ALDOT did on the I-10 Mobile River Bridge project, remember, and I said, hey, didn't they just run out of the money too quickly? And he said, well, there are some ideas here for a scale back, or what is the term he used? It really stuck with me. Let's see. I wrote this down here. Descoped I-10 Mobile River Bridge and Bayway Project. We'll talk about that with State Senator Chris Elliott coming up after 1 o'clock. The international news I've got here, this headline here, it seems like everybody uses Hellscape now. Did anybody use Hellscape a year ago or 2 years ago? Seems like Hellscape. That's the it's the go-to. I hear Hellscape more than ever. I don't know that I ever heard it before growing up, but Hellscape in the mix. And this comes from the Asia Times. I thought this was of interest as we look at a world that is with active wars going on and possible wars circling. This from Asia Times, and this came out late last week. Headline here, the U.S., that's us, y'all, us, U.S. plans Hellscape drone swarm in Taiwan war. Says the U.S. strategy would use unmanned aircraft, subs, ships, and other classified capabilities to inflict an inferno on invading Chinese forces. Says the U.S. plans to turn the Taiwan Strait into a hellscape. There it is again. Maybe that's what I'll call the podcast, Dalton. Hellscape. Had some other name, but hellscape. Turn the strait into a hellscape of drone swarms drone swarms against a possible Chinese invasion of Taiwan, which would buy time for U.S. and allied intervention to assist the beleaguered self-governing island in a war scenario. This month, the Washington Post reported that the U.S. Indo-Pacific Command, led by Admiral Samuel Paparo, announced a hellscape strategy. So they're using this at the Pentagon. All right. Hellscape strategy to use drone swarms to thwart any potential Chinese invasion of Taiwan. According to the report, the Hellscape plan responds to Chinese Xi Jinping's directive that the People's Liberation Army be combat ready to take Taiwan by force, if necessary, by 2027. So what are we doing about it? Well, it's a hellscape, y'all. So the U.S. plan involves using numerous unmanned drones, submarines, surface ships, and other classified capabilities to swarm the Taiwan Strait to slow down the Chinese forces for a month that would allow the United States and its allies to mount a full response. So I guess it would be they launch it. So instead of having those assets in theater, I guess there, the drones could do enough to keep things at a standstill against the Chinese invasion till we could get ourselves involved in World War III, right? Says, in line with the hellscape strategy's Fabian approach, the Asia Times noted in February 2024 report that Taiwan was most vulnerable to defeat in the first 90 days of a Chinese invasion and would most likely fall quickly without U.S. and allied military intervention. However, Washington Post notes that PLA's rapid expansion and U.S. military budget constraints present significant challenges to implementing the hellscape strategy. For instance, the U.S. Navy drone budget The U.S. Navy drone budget would fall to $101.8 million in 2025, down from $172 million this year. Also, the U.S. Navy remains wedded to building major combatants such as destroyers and submarines instead of fully embracing drone technology. Now, we talked about this a while ago in reference to the success the Ukrainians have had against the Russians' Black Sea Fleet, right? The number of very expensive Russian assets some of them they've admitted to, some they don't admit that have been sunk, but I believe they've been sunk. And the Ukrainians were using these drone submarines, for lack of a better term, kind of like the idea of back in the early days of submarine warfare. You think about Civil War, the idea that they would pilot this structure, the submarine, to get close enough to ram a ship or put a charge into a ship. Well, in this case, you don't have to have people in them. And these drones are right at the surface, or some I think can go a little bit under the surface and be guided. And you take something that's cost $50,000 and use it to bring down a ship. You could have minefields, right? Those are a thing. But minefields then in a place like the Taiwan Strait are a problem when you're not at war, right? The regular ships going through. In the case of these drones, they can be piloted right under the water level and hit a ship. This is being done at a low cost in the Ukraine war. Other sorts of drones, aerial drones used in the Israel versus Hamas conflict. But we had this story back when it was Ukraine, and now Asia Times saying the same thing, that instead of increasing the budget for drones, the Navy is lowering it. I mean, down from $172 million in drones this year to $101 million in 2025. So we're still sticking. And listen, we have a vested interest, right, in building big ships here. I get it. At the same time, do we move forward, and go to the next thing? I mean, why do we have to wait until everybody else has this kind of drone technology and then we're trying to catch up? Although I've asked this question, I'll ask this question to you as well. Do you think unmanned warfare, and we'll come back from the break, I want to get some calls on this. Does unmanned warfare, as we talk about everything from the Dan and Dalton the other day talking about the cyber dog, warrior things, and the Chinese have been showing some videos of that, to the robotic warrior, to drones. Does unmanned, does the idea of having militaries full of unmanned materiel, unmanned warriors, or whatever we call it, the implements of war, does that lead to more war? If it becomes not human beings that are in the way, that you might start more wars, get involved in more wars, because it's like, heck, it's just a drone. All right, coming right back. 343-0106.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 12:52, FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile. You see that goat story from land? Yep, we'll get to the goat story. Because other cities have, stories where, a Bengal tiger's on the loose or something. We got a goat, but we'll get to that. To the text line here, Damn Yankee said someone from the Alabama State Department of Education should ask AIDT how many high school graduates failed the entry-level math test for Austell. Do you think, I hear what you're saying, but do you think anybody at the Alabama State Department, Alabama Department of Education, wants to ask how many high school graduates failed the math test? They'll tell you, we just gave them the test, man. They graduated. Settle down, Ashley. Ashley from Loosedale said, instead of hellscape, said, I thought you said Hail State. No, only about, 2 months and 2 weeks or something till, let's see, 1, 2, 3. Yeah, about that. Yeah, 2 months and 2 weeks till football gets started. T-Bone said, Drone Swarm sounds like an installment in the Hellscape series. Hellscape, Drone Swarm. And I know there was a, the Hellscape, but it's just that word is, maybe I just notice it differently, but have y'all noticed, like, there's more people using the Hellscape thing? Grant says, the Chinese make the cyber dogs. We're going to make cyber mosquitoes and ground hornets. Good luck, fellas. Ha ha. Make the hornets. Now you're talking. Fire Dog said, I vote for AI warfare. Well, Fire Dog, who has served our country, I'd probably do the same. But what do you think, Fire Dog, from your perspective? Would we be, like, the situation, if you didn't catch it earlier, I was talking about a story came out from the Asia Times with reporting of this plan, which I, you know, when we roll out, when we tell everybody our plan to, it's just like everybody who said, oh, well, the Russians are in the Caribbean doing war games. This means they're going to do something. Nah, yeah, that's the right hand. You need to watch for the left hook. It's the one you don't see. So when we roll out and say, this is what we do, how much of that is real? How much of that is just saber rattling? You know, to say, well, we could do this, and would that make China not want to do this? If the story was, in short, y'all, that there was a strategy here rolled out, which, by the way, we still, where we stand on Taiwan is very interesting, right? We support Taiwan, but we don't recognize them in the One China policy, but we do. And it says the Washington Post reports that the U.S. Indo-Pacific Command, led by Admiral Paparo, announced the Hellscape strategy that would use drone swarms to thwart any potential Chinese invasion of Taiwan. I guess these would all go into effect long enough to let the United States and allies, I don't know who will follow us in that, God bless them, into opposing the Chinese there at Taiwan. So the drones would slow things down enough that we could get assets, you know, into theater. Said U.S. plan involves using numerous unmanned drones, submarines, surface ships, and other classified capabilities to swarm the Taiwan Strait to slow down the Chinese forces for a month to allow the U.S. and the allies to mount a full response. Do you think having something like that would get us into a war more quickly? Right? To have that technology there, that if China makes a move on Taiwan and you had to actually risk Americans, human beings, in that attack, would you, versus drones, would you get into a war more quickly, because it's not actual sons and daughters, it's drones? I don't know. Matt says, hey, Sean, happy Monday. What was the film where the wars were all fought by robots or automation, and then the citizens had to line up and go into the killing machine according to the outcome? I don't know. I have not seen that movie, but I do wonder that. So some of you will know the movie. Matt, I do not know the movie. I know this is the easy game to play with out there, movies Sean hasn't seen. But that's what I wonder, too. So say we get to the point where we're fighting all robots, right? Robots and drones in these wars. So what happens when you lose? I guess you don't have enough drones to defend yourself, and then the other side wins, and then or do you then the people fight the drone? I don't know. But that's it. Yeah, it's just, is that really what we're going to do? I don't know. I mean, you hear, you know, it seems like a lot of bluster. If we're telling the Chinese exactly what we're going to do, is it like a double fake out that is what we're going to do, or that's not what we're going to do? Somebody asked Chuck Schumer, which, by the way, yes, I mentioned that at the beginning of the hour. Well, if y'all seen this yet, Chuck Schumer, here's the headline from NBC 15. Chuck Schumer grilled over Father's Day barbecue photo, obviously staged. said Senator Chuck Schumer on Sunday deleted a photo showcasing his Father's Day cookout after some social media users questioned the senator's grilling skills. The New York Democrat explained in the since-deleted post that his family had spent most of their lives living in an apartment building. Senator Schumer shared his excitement over now being able to host a family barbecue due to his daughter and her wife. His daughter and her wife moving into a house with a backyard. So you see that sleight of hand he just did there. Then his multiple hamburgers, all of which appeared to be raw, could be seen on the grill. A slice of cheese topped one of the patties, prompting social media users to call out the senator's grilling method. Senator Schumer eventually deleted the post. So he put up a bunch of the back and forth on social media. So Schumer, I guess, had a stock photo or something being put up to act like he was regular folks doing some grilling in the backyard on Father's Day, which, of course, reminded both Dalton and I very quickly of Elizabeth Warren back in the day when she had her Instagram Live and she talked about she's just regular folks drinking beer in her kitchen with her dog and her husband. We may, if we get time next hour, play some of that. Joining us here in just a few, State Senator Chris Elliott